Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
There is no chance that I start anywhere other than what I consider to be the most iconic and exhilarating sound in sports. Ionic. Alvin, if it's not too much to ask, can you please do the honors? Now, the reason I call that the most iconic sound is, for my money, and there's still so many things about sports and in sports that I love, I still think the NCAA tournament is the single best thing. I think it's the single best thing in large part because of the format. It's unbelievable. And you just see the most incredible things. Love the Super Bowl. Love the World Series. Love the Stanley Cup Final. You know me, I'm a big World Cup guy. Love MMA, love boxing. I mean, I love almost everything about sports, but I would be hard-pressed to find something that delivers more consistently than the NCAA tournament. It almost never doesn't deliver. So, yes, the madness has arrived. The dopamine receptors are warming up. The conveniently and intentionally timed vasectomies have been scheduled. Y'all, we have ourselves an NCAA tournament bracket. Love to see it.
Love to see it.
Now, we did have some surprises on Selection Sunday because there always are, right? No surprise. Thanks, Alvy. I like the song, but not that much. No surprise at the very top because the defending champion UConn Huskies are right where they belong. Back on the one line as the top overall seed. Of course they're deserving. And you don't even have to take it from me because Vegas has them as the betting favorite. Defending champs, top overall seed, betting favorite. Is that any good? The real question is if anybody in the field can give them a game this time around. Because, remember, UConn curb stomped their way through that dance last year. They didn't have Cinderella dancing slippers on. They were rocking concrete curb stomping boots. Nobody even played within single digits. Nobody really came close either. That was then. This is now. And this time it should be a very different story because the East region is no joke. In fact, it is a joke. You feel me? It's ridiculous. I'm not sure if the committee rewarded my dude, Dan Hurley, for having the best team in the country once again, or if they stabbed him in the back like some hater on some message board. I mean, sure, giving them the number one seed overall is great, but asking them to fight their way out of that region is damn near inhumane. A region that has already been called the region of death, which seems pretty dramatic until you hear about the region of death. You look at the region of death. Because the number two seed in the East is the Big 12 champ, Iowa State, who ran right through Houston. The number three seed is the Big Ten champ, Illinois. The number four seed is the SEC champ, Auburn. So you've got four major conference champions. In fact, the champs of arguably the four best conferences in the same group along with the number one overall seed. I mean, for who? For what? Exactly what is the reward for UConn getting that number one seed? Unless you consider getting kicked in the stick a reward. The hell kind of region is that? What kind of reward is that? Yeah, great. They get to stay relatively close to home. Oh, awesome. Yeah, but they've got like the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Cavaliers in their region. Well, the Lakers would not be a threat. Not even to UConn. Anyway, brutal for UConn. But maybe it gives the rest of the number ones an easier path and a leg up over the overall number one. In fact, I know it does. Now, you all know this is a big Houston Cougar house. That's a damn good basketball team with a legend of a coach. North Carolina is back with what feels like the ninth year of Armando Bacot leading the way. And then you've got Purdue. The hell do we do with Purdue? What do we do with Purdue? I mean, it would be great if you guys actually won a game this year from that one line. I said won a game, not won a tournament. Won a game from that one line. Now, I know we had to test the theory last year that you guys could lose in the first round of any tournament. Even if you were handed a 16 seed to beat up on, well, you prove your point. We get it, Purdue. You can lose in the first round to anybody. We get it. Now, the good news for you Boilermaker fans is that the only other time a one lost to a 16, that one came back the following year and won the whole damn thing. So, Purdue, it's time to go pull a Virginia. You got the humiliating first round loss part down. Now it's time to win the whole damn thing. And you can. You're good enough. We saw you during the regular season. This team can do it as long as they don't play with both hands around their throats. I'm Purdue. Of course, there's a lot of drama down the rest of the bracket because there's always drama down the rest of the bracket. And there's always going to be drama when you snub Rick Pitino. I did say it on Friday. I said it on the show. I said it in a minute. They don't need to beat UConn to get in. Now, they almost did beat UConn. They don't need to, though. They're in. They're already in. And I laid out my reasons. The committee had different plans. The committee did not let them in. The committee snubbed Pitino. And not just Pitino, but the entire Big East. Yes, the conference is good enough to have the defending champ and the number one overall seed and the betting favorite. The conference is also good enough to have a number two seed and a number three seed. But that's all they're good enough to get. They may be the second best conference in the country, according to Ken Pom. But according to the selection committee, it sounds like they're the worst. The conference was only 12-4 in the tournament last year, but apparently that was just too good for the committee to avoid a repeat of that by avoiding half of the league. Look, I'm no bracketologist. I'm not going to sit here and point fingers at programs and tell you which numbers or which teams shouldn't be in or should be in, but I think we can all agree, right? I don't even need to be like some crazy analytics nerd to know this. I think we can all agree that three Big East teams is an outrageous number. Only three. But who do we blame? Do we blame the committee? Do we pull a Pitino and blame the analytics? Because according to Rick, the net is dead to him.
I mean, we're 32 in the net. Well, first of all, I think we all should probably never mention that word again because I think it's fraudulent. I think that we had a good strength of schedule. Ken Pom, why mention him? We were 26 in Ken Pom. So I don't know. It's we tried to play a tough schedule. We tried to do things the right way, and we didn't get in. But, you know, I never make excuses. I respect the committee for what they do. They give their time. They give their energy to it. They didn't think that we measured up to their standards, and we'll take it very positively like men and move forward. We're not going to gripe. We're not going to say we got screwed. We're not going to. None of that helps. Bitterness does not help. I've had enough bitterness in my life to last a lifetime.
Hey, my man, I say this respectfully, Rick. You know I like you a lot. That's as fraudulent as the net. My man's like, hey, no bitterness here. Yeah, no bitterness there, I can tell. Not bitter at all. We're going to take it like men. We're going to move forward. There is no bitterness here. I've had enough bitterness to last me in my entire life. Apparently not, dude. Fraudulent. Apparently there's still some bitter left.
Fraudulent.
I mean, it's been a pretty bitter season when you think about it. You're going into the tank. You call your players out. You call your staff out. It worked. You got to 20 wins. You're over 500 in the conference. You did enough. And then they jammed you. But we're not bitter because I know bitterness gets you nowhere. Fraudulent little bitches. He's awesome. Funny thing is, I think I know where the committee got the idea that St. John's wasn't quite at the standard. The St. John's was not quite good enough. If I remember correctly, it was something somebody said about this team's, what was it? Their lateral movement or lack thereof.
I think they're unathletic. I don't think they move well laterally. I don't think they're going to pick it up in the next week. I think they're slow laterally. I mean, Sean Conway gives you everything he can. He's slow laterally. About five guys are slow laterally. Even the Celtics, when we lost, I've enjoyed every minute being a Boston Celtic coach. Didn't like the fact that we lost in that following year, but this has been the most unenjoyable experience I've had since I've been coaching.
Do you have any second thoughts of taking this job?
No, not at all. It's not St. John's. It's my team.
So, let me tell you about something. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's amazing. It's something different for fresh breath. It is an incredible product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is a game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't, because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. It's clinically tested against the toughest offenders, even garlic and onions. You just pop two or three in your mouth, suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts for hours. The product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth. It then goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath, or you get your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you're going to want it, but they will. They've got free shipping if you order three packs or more, and trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com. Right now, you'll get 15% off when you use the promo code ROME. Zelmins.com. You do have to use the code ROME to get your 15% savings, ROME. Thing is, and again, I'm on his side. I think they did enough to get in. I think they got shafted. But if the committee wanted to make a really persuasive argument, instead of running around, throwing around their net, this, that, and the other, you know, their quad one record, their quad two, their net, you know what they should have done? They should have got like an old school cassette recorder and just push play when it came time. Play of that. He's like, even their own guy knows they're not good enough. Look, I'm just messing around. But we all know that St. John's was a transformed team since that day. That was their whole argument, right? They were one of the hottest teams in the country, and that matters. We all know that matters. How you're playing late in the season matters, and they were one of the hottest teams in the country. They upset Seton Hall in the Big East tournament. Then they went and they played UConn closer than any of last year's tournament teams did. They won 20. They were above 500 in a great conference. They had the second highest net rating of any team that didn't get in. So, yes, I thought they were in. I thought they deserved to get in. I said as much before the UConn game. And I said they should need to win that game to get in. Obviously, the committee felt otherwise. And while Pitino says that bitterness won't get them anywhere, he sounds pretty bitter to me. And I don't blame him.
Fraudulent.
And I don't blame him for blaming the net. Now, I might not have been as high on Providence's case, but I do love head coach Kim English's brutally honest take on bracket analytics.
Yeah, I think the analytics are bullshit, right? Yeah. I think you could schedule bad teams in your non-league and beat the snot out of them and beat them by 50 and 60. And I think coaching for so long has been a gentleman agreement. I mean, you have a large lead at the end of the game. You know, for health reasons, you take guys out. To get some other guys opportunities to play, you take guys out. But right now, it might be a change in college basketball.
I love that response. I mean, there's quote, calling BS on something, and then there's calling something BS the way he did. Just straight up.
Yeah, I think the analytics are bullshit.
I get it, man. The analytics got messed up because there were only 11 teams in that conference, and one of them was 3-29 and lost their last 20 games in a row. So, yes, sucks for Pitino, sucks for Kim English, sucks for Shaheen Holloway and Seton Hall. But at least there's this. At least they all still have their jobs. There is that. Unlike my guy Dan Monson at Long Beach State, what a wild, wild story that is. Don't get it twisted. Monson and the Beach, and you know me, I'm a Big West guy, so I'm really fascinated by this one. Monson and the Beach are, in fact, going dancing. It's just as soon as they're done dancing, Monson is going to be out of a job. Because last Monday, Long Beach State bleep-canned the guy. But we're magnanimous enough to say that he could coach the rest of the season after spending 17 years there. So then, of course, he turned around and he won the Big West tournament. Obviously, something that was not supposed to happen. Uh-oh! You think that's very awkward. So, they fired him, said he could hang around. He gets them through the Big West tourney and into the NCAA tourney. Super awkward. What happens if he wins a game in the tourney? What happens if they ride this into an improbable, but not impossible, Sweet 16 appearance? Then what the hell are you going to do? State school? Sorry, Gaucho Tourette's kicking in. That's an amazing thing. And here's why I'm such a fan of Dan Monson. Anybody else would have taken this opportunity to gloat, to say bleep you, to spike the ball in the face of the administration, but not this dude. Punt the ball off the scoreboard, not this dude. This dude actually pulled one of the more humble post games ever after he ran through the Big West Tournament Championship, again, something they were not supposed to do.
I mean, I've had a blessed, God has blessed me with a great career, and these kids have been awesome to coach. And when Jim Harbaugh says, who's got it better than him, somebody needs to tell him Dan Monson.
Well played, dude. I mean, how classy. They fired this guy. He's already fired. He's already dead coach walking. He's like, man, I'm blessed. I've had such an amazing run. I've had 17 years at the beach. I love these kids. Somebody needs to tell Jim Harbaugh who's got it better than me. Nobody. I don't know, dude. You had me up until that point. I got to be honest. While I like you much better than I like Jim, not to be personal about it, he'd say the same thing about me. While I like you much better than I like him, he still has it much better than you. Honestly, I mean, you've got it great, and I appreciate you so much for saying as much. But somebody needs to let you know, Dan, and it might as well be me, since I'm a Big West guy too, he still has it better than you. Why is that? He just won a natty. He skipped town on NCAA and federal investigators, sniffing around, looking around, to take an NFL job that pays him $16 million. Per. So yes, he has it better than you. In fact, he has it a lot better than you because you have no job and he has one that pays $16 million. And he got out ahead of the mob. But again, dude, love the attitude. Love the beaches running the dance. And let me stop right there. That is not an easy thing for me to say. All right, they're like the enemy to me. I don't root. I don't get personal except for a few things. When my kids played sports, I always rooted for them. When we were super heavy into horse racing, of course, I rooted for my horses. And I root for my college. Long Beach State was a definite enemy of UC Santa Barbara. Even all these years later, Seth Greenberg and I would still laugh about that. So, let me say that one more time. I love Dan's attitude, and I do, in fact. If the Gauchos can't make that run, I love the Beaches' run to the dance, especially since they fired their guy. I'm just surprised that Dan didn't start talking about the confetti and about how every piece of confetti has its own story to tell.
You watch this confetti come down, it's like thousands of confetti. It tells a story. There's a story in every one of those pieces of confetti to me. Amazing blue confetti.
You know how else they advanced? I'm shocked that he did not credit his defense for winning the conference tourney. I mean, what's next? Is the dude going to call the Beach America's team as well? What's next? Does he place a terrible call in a smack-off 30?
Romy, it's good to be on the smack-off. I just want to say thanks for taking my call, and I'd like to wish everybody out there a very happy holiday, and I don't really have a whole lot of smack to say today. it's a holiday and day of peace and harmony, kind of like Fuzzy and Tiger playing in the Masters. But I want to wish everybody and their families a happy holiday, except for some of your clones who don't really have families and are behind on their child support payments, like your boy Sean in Syracuse. Tell that clone to get a life.
You know what? It's almost so surreal and so weird and so bad. It's almost getting better now. It's starting to age well. It's actually starting to sound like pretty good smack. Now, Dan's not doing any of that. Like I said, he's handling everything with class. That's the difference between he and Harbaugh. Oh, and special commendation to another Michigan man who completely imploded and flamed and burned out, Juwan Howard. He came to the program as one of the most respected types in all of basketball on any level, got off to that great start, and then completely torpedoed his job and reputation in under 5 years' time. Not easy to do, Jay. Even for a great Michigan man like you. Dude, you were a member of the Fab Five. How do you do this? Oh, one more thing. Not only are you tainting that legacy, so as one guy flames out, we have another guy yet reborn. You know who you are. We all know you're out there. I'm talking to you, bracket guy. Unfortunately, this is your time to shine. You know, when you're filling out your 19 different brackets. Just know this. We all see right through you. We know you don't have a system. We know that you're not really doing anything that you've devised. What you're doing is doing a deep dive on anything that John Rothstein puts to paper or online. You're going back and forth, and you're listening to every second of Matt Norlander's Eye on College Basketball podcast in double speed, because that's the fastest way to absorb all the info. So when you tell everybody in your office that you knew all along when you picked that number 15 seed upset over a 2, I know you're completely full of it. Like, oh, you know, in my former co-worker's wife's daughter's bracket pool with her sorority sisters, I got Long Beach State going to the Elite Eight. Yeah, thanks for that, Seth Greenberg. Very happy for you. Let's talk for a minute about O'Reilly Auto Parts, because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road and offering helpful service and parts knowledge that you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. And they can also test your battery for free. If it needs to be replaced, they will help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. When you need a specialty tool to finish the job, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and ask about their loaner tool program. Simply pay a refundable deposit and borrow the right tool, then get your deposit back when it's returned. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. He is Matt Norlander. Matt, it is your time of year, brother. What's going on? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Let's just go. Team me up. I'm ready for anything and everything you got.
I knew it, dude. I love it. Love to see it. All right, never an easy gig for the selection committee. From where you're sitting, how do you think they did this year?
Not great. I want to at least start by saying that it's a very, very hard thing to do, and the important thing for everyone to remember is that you've got now 12 people on this committee. And so they are going to weight things differently, and the way one person votes will not be the way another person votes. And so what we see here from seeding and selection is the composite of everyone doing that. So it's not like this is a uniform across the board decision. I get all of that, but Virginia being in the field is vexing to me. And when you have teams like St. John's and Providence that weren't even in the first four out, I just don't quite get that. And seeding in general, I actually think the committee the past three or four times has done a pretty good job with seeding and selection. I haven't had too many issues for whatever reason. And I think the reason is because the bubble, in my opinion, had not been this good in about 10 plus years. You had five bid thieves on the board that you know, increased the level of team that cleared into the field. But that led to a situation here where there's too much inconsistency. I'll just run quickly through it for you. And not to play favorites with high majors or mid majors. FAU is an 8, is an absolute joke. MSU is a 9, is a joke. I don't get how Dayton is a 7. I think Duquesne's on the 11 line because they had to do some bracketing principles and allow BYU to drop down to a 6 because BYU can't play on Sundays. I guess I can accept that. The Mountain West sent 6 teams, and the seedings are just unreal. The fact that you've got Boise State and Colorado State both being shipped to Dayton when no one in the world had that happening before the brackets came out is vexing to me. James Madison, as a 31-win team, as a 12 seed, Wisconsin is getting no favors whatsoever. Utah State as an 8. It won the league, won 27 games in a conference that had 6 teams in the tournament there. I don't get that at all. So those are the ones that kind of pop out to me. Oh, and by the way, New Mexico wins the auto bid. It's a wagon right now. It needed to win the conference tournament. We found out, the committee chair told me on CBS Sports HQ on Sunday night, that had they not won the auto bid, Lobos wouldn't have even been in the field. They're at 11. Jim, that's like an 8 at worst right now. Like, I'm seriously considering putting them into the Sweet 16. They're that good. So, we transfer over and get ready to get hyped about the matchups. But, you know, that Sunday night into Monday afternoon and Monday morning is about just reacting. And I just want the process to be as good as it possible. Committee did a good job, not a great job. And there's some seedings here that make absolutely no sense to me. You cannot defend FAU on the 8 line. And if anything, UConn, the number one overall seed, gets into the hardest region. And even before you get to FAU, but in the second round, they might have to play a team that went to the Final Four last year. So a little bit twisted on that. But overall, the brackets here, I'm thrilled and can't wait for Thursday.
Well done, dude. What a great response. Matt, I was going to ask you before I moved on to the matchups, I was going to ask you about that very last point that you made. The committee made UConn the top overall seed, but given the path they'll have to take to repeat, did the committee not do the defending national champs dirty?
They did them dirty here. That's the irony of this. So UConn in the East, in the top left, if you're looking at your bracket, UConn's the 1, Iowa State's the 2, Illinois's the 3, Auburn's the 4, San Diego State's the 5. And here's the thing, Iowa State was the final 2 seed. This is the team that many people had as the last one. Not only was Iowa State not the last 1 seed, it was the last 2 seed when it's a top 5 team at KenPom right now. Between that, Auburn being the 4, Auburn is the 4. In UConn's region, it's 4th at KenPom in the entire country right now. Now, from a resume standpoint, Auburn didn't obviously deserve to be on the 2 line, maybe not the 3. But from a metric standpoint, UConn has absolutely the hardest. I mean, Illinois is probably the trendiest 3 seed to go to the Final Four, if not for being in the same region as UConn. So, yeah, it definitely, it's unquestionable. When you look at team quality, when you look at metric quality, overall resume, the best team in the country was given the hardest path on paper if seeding holds to make the Final Four. But as you and I both know, when you boot up your show Friday morning and you get to talking about those Thursday results, brackets will be in flames, and we're going to be talking about at least 2 or 3 results that the majority didn't have. And, the bracket will be on fire, as it always is.
As it always is, Matt Norlander joining us. So, Matt, what are some of the first-round matchups that you are most looking forward to?
All right, I'm going to give you my top 5 here, and this is chronological order. To me, Dayton, Nevada, that's your first one Thursday, approximately 4:30 Eastern, TBS. That's going down in Salt Lake City. Huge one. Dayton, Nevada is a 7-10 on paper, but that is, to me, that is a couple of teams that are both, you know, top 30 in the country. A lot of offense, can't wait for that. Gonzaga, McNeese, that is a big one. 7:25 Eastern, Thursday night, TBS. You've got a Gonzaga team that is not vintage Gonzaga. It's made 8 straight Sweet 16. It's going to try and go to 9, but here comes Will Wade and McNeese, the Cowboys. They are legit. 30-win team out of the Southland and registers as a top 60 team in the country overall. I think that McNeese is going to give them a real push. Also in that region, out there in Salt Lake City, you have Kansas against Samford. Kansas has its thinnest roster ever under Bill Self. It's got Kevin McCullough Jr. and Hunter Dickinson coming off of injury. We don't know how much they'll be at full strength, if at all. Samford plays like 11 dudes. Bucky McMillan has something called Bucky Ball. They press every single possession. It does not matter after a make, miss, timeout, loose ball, doesn't matter. They press every single time. And so because Kansas is so thin, that's a fascinating one to me. I'm actually going to pick Samford. Yeah, I'm an idiot. I'm going to pick against Bill Self in the first round of the tournament.
Oh, no, dude, can I interject? I don't think that's idiotic at all. I see it working. If I'm Kansas, I'm really nervous about that matchup.
And rightfully so, because they don't have any bench. I mean, Self has talked about it all season long. It is going to be fascinating. That back-to-back in Salt Lake City on Thursday is going to be incredible. Those are both night games for your audience, as a reminder. 7:25 and close to 10 Eastern on Thursday on TBS. And then two more that I really like. Clemson, New Mexico, that's a Friday game around 3:10. Again, I'm in on New Mexico. Clemson's a really good team. This is where when you miss seed, you also you don't do justice to the team on the other side of it. Clemson gets a really, really tough matchup. That's a 6-11 on paper, but really feels closer to like a 6 versus a 7 or an 8. I can't wait to watch that one. New Mexico has Jalen House, who might be the best interviewer in the entire sport and is an amazing defender. Their run was incredible, and we saw that on CBS over the weekend. And then Auburn against Yale, I'm taking that one for a couple reasons. One, Auburn, I've seen them in person. It's a good team. It's a deep team. Yale has legit talent. There's a guy named Danny Wolf who rocks a mask. If Yale wins this game, he's going to be as viral a sensation as anyone going into Saturday. That's a 4:15 Eastern tip on Friday. It's an amazing matchup. I think Yale's going to give him a good push. Bruce Pearl's team is good. It's got Jani Broome, a big down low, who is an excellent defender. But, yeah, man, those are five. I'm going to give you one more. Why not? Let's go. It's a Monday. We're absolutely on fire. Cannot wait for the tournament to get going.
Dude, give me five more. Give me five more. I'm great.
Washington State Drake is a 7-10 going down in Omaha. That's a Thursday matchup, a really, really good one. Washington State in the tournament for the first time since 2008. Kyle Smith has an incredible story, and I know you've talked about it on the show, and you let me even wax poetic about it when I was on recently. Miles Rice beat cancer last year. He's one of the best players in the Pac-12 and has guided this program to the tournament. And then Drake has Tucker DeVries, one of the best mid-major players in the country. That game has immense, immense potential. When you look at the bracket, Washington State, Drake, Dayton, Nevada, Texas will play the winner of Virginia, Colorado State, and then Florida will play the winner of Boise State, Colorado. The 7-10s this year feel as strong as they've been over the past half decade. We are set up for a ton, and I didn't even get to the fact that I think James Madison has a really good shot to win as a 12 over a 5 in Wisconsin and Brooklyn. I will be there on Thursday.
Matt Norlander joining us, breaking it all down. I love it. Before you go, what about Iowa? I mean, Purdue. We've seen this time and time again. They had that great regular season. We also know that means nothing. Is this the year Zach Edey and the Boilers finally make it together or put it all together in March?
They've got a really good chance. So I'm going to repeat something I said on the podcast, because I think for people that are trying to get their brackets done, this is key context here. In your bracket pool, however many people are in it, 10 people, 25 people, 50 people, 100 people, there are going to be a lot of people that fade Purdue, and understandably so, because they have this reputation attached to them. The same exact thing was true in 2019 when I told people to take Virginia to win the national title, because they were coming off the loss to UMBC. Virginia was a team that played games in the 50s, and they were a popular fade, but they were actually a tremendous value pick because they had the resume, the talent, and the coaching to win it all. What happened? They cut down the nets. Tony Bennett did and changed his reputation forever. Purdue can do the same this season. Now, it happens to be in a tournament with UConn that's unreal, and Houston, which is an incredible defensive team. So I'm not saying that its positioning in the overall bracket as good as Virginia in 2019, but to get to the Final Four at least, I think it's really, really, really good value. Now, it didn't get a favor by getting potentially Utah State as an 8 in the second round, which, again, that's ridiculous. Utah State should not be on the 8 line. But the Sweet 16, be it Gonzaga, shorthanded Kansas, or if McNeese or Samford were to break through, I kind of like all of those for Purdue. And then the one tricky one to me, I actually like Purdue's matchup against Tennessee personally. I think that actually works out well for Purdue. You might have the two best players in the country facing off if that happened, Edey and then Dalton Connect. But if it was Creighton, that'd be the one that'd have a lot of intrigue around here, because Ryan Kalkbrenner's a really good defensive big. Baylor Sharman's been like a third-team All-American this season. Trey Alexander's a future pro. They will face some resistance, but I do believe they have the goods, and as of right now, Jim, I reserve the right to change this, okay? I don't even know what time it is, what day it is, but I might change my pick from Purdue in the Final Four by the end of the night. But right now, I do have Purdue going to Phoenix and erasing some of that stigma from years past. And one last tag on the Boilers here. They need to get to the Final Four to overcome this reputation. In my opinion, if they have three awesome wins to get to the Elite Eight, but then they wake up and they play either Creighton or Tennessee or anyone else, and they don't get through, I still don't think they wash away the fact that they got beat by St. Peter's. They lost to FDU. They lost to North Texas a few years back. I think it really will take a Final Four minimally to shed some of that reputation.
Hey, Matt, I said the same thing before you came on. I know you're locked in, but I said the same thing. They absolutely positively have to have a deep run. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. They have to have a deep run this year. They have to. He is a CBS Sports senior college basketball writer. Hey, Matt, by the way, you may not know where you are. You may not know what time it is. You are locked in, brother. Great job. You know I had to come to you right after Selection Sunday. Thanks for delivering, as always. Great to have you on, man, and we'll do it again soon.
Jim, I appreciate you so much. Let's have a great, great NCAA tournament.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anybody? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call. Get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Give the Steelers this much. I mean, in this regard, I do see them working. I see the business they're doing. And it's pretty clear, once again, Steelers gonna Steeler. And this shakeup in the QB room is potentially pretty intriguing for now. I mean, we're going to find out how much they actually improved their QB room, but there's no doubt about one thing. They pulled off the cheapest QB rebuild ever. The Steelers just brought in renegade Russell Wilson. Renegade Russ and Justin Fields for a grand total of 1.2 mil and a conditional day three pick in next year's draft. So essentially, they brought in Renegade Russ and Justin Fields for almost nothing, almost for free, which is pretty clever. There were absolutely better, more expensive options out there that would have excited an already pissed off fan base. But again, they did completely change out their quarterback room. They upgraded it in the process, in my opinion, and they gave up almost nothing to do so. And while they do get a couple of dudes with big question marks, they get a couple of dudes fighting to salvage their careers, both, and will be deeply motivated, both. And did I say they got them for almost nothing? Even Steeler fan, pissed as they've been for months, knows there's more to be excited about when it comes to Russett and Fields than there ever was about the combination of Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph. And it's just wild to see Tiny Hands taking his tiny hands elsewhere after only 2 years. 2 years ago, they spent the 20th overall pick on him, and now he and his tiny hands are gone. And even more so, not just because of his play, but because he got all bent, reportedly, bent and butthurt that the team added the sack of potatoes to the quarterback room. I mean, who gets threatened by a sack of potatoes?
Like a sack of potatoes.
Much less a first-round draft pick who's like almost half his age. Who gets that up in their feelings about competing with a 35-year-old Russet, especially a pro athlete that from day one has been taught, compete at everything, every day? This guy got that bent, that butthurt, especially after initially saying he had no issue with it. Like, fine, cool, bring it on. Tiny Hands, my dude. Tiny Hands. I don't want to have to gloss you tiny brain also. Then Alvin will need a tiny brain alarm. But if these reports are true, and you got all bent, and that's why you got traded, that was really stupid. I mean, really dumb.
Brains.
There you go. It took Alvin 30 brains. Seconds to come up with a tiny brains alarm.
Brains.
Dude, you shouldn't be afraid of competing with a brains. Sack of spuds. In fact, that probably was a good situation for you. You think the Steelers were in any rush to admit how badly they butchered their selection of you? You think they were in any hurry to admit they botched the 20th overall pick just 2 years ago? Yeah, sure, they took a shot on Russett. But best case scenario would have been Tiny Hands working out, playing his way into a long-term starting role, handling it like a pro. Handling it like a pro. I'll give an example. Baker Mayfield. Of course you know I'm going there. The former number one pick overall. A guy who actually won a playoff game for the Cleveland Browns. Goes to Tampa Bay on a one-year prove-it deal for $4 million and has to beat out Kyle Trask. Kept his mouth shut, won the job, and turned that into an extension and tens of millions of bucks guaranteed. Not Tiny Hands. Nope. Tiny Hands, big pride, and big ego got him dealt. Butt-hurtedness got him dealt. I mean, if this guy thought the Steelers owed him anything at all, he was sadly mistaken. All he had to do was play like the first-round draft pick that he was, and he wouldn't have found himself in this place in the first place. If he actually looked and played anything like the 20th pick overall, the team would not have had to bring in a washed potato to compete for the job. You think you had a problem then. Never mind that your reputation just took a major hit. Because now you're seen as a guy who's thin-skinned, butthurt, and not willing to compete or earn something, and entitled. But now, you didn't want to compete with a washed potato. Now you have to compete with Jalen Hurts, which is obviously a much tougher competition to win. So that guy could not have handled that any worse. If that really is the reason why he got dealt, and it would appear to be, he could not have handled that any worse. Now you've got Justin Fields, who gets to compete with a washed potato in Pittsburgh. And all things considered, that's a pretty damn good situation for a dude who had very few options, whose market seemed to have cratered. I mean, it really is pretty amazing that all the Bears could get for this dude was a conditional day three pick in next year's draft. Although, if you believe reports, again, that wasn't actually the best deal on the table. They just took that deal to, quote, do right by Fields, because Pittsburgh is such a good situation for him. And I do agree with that part. But they did what now? They took a worse offer. And the reason that they took a worse offer is because they wanted to do right by Fields. Now, that is hilarious. I'm not sure which part of that's more laughable, because it's all absurd. Now, they want to do right by Fields. They couldn't put a team around him that could actually support him, and they couldn't put a stable coaching staff around him that could actually help, you know, coach him. But now they want to have the dudes back. Chicago immediately started stacking weapons for Caleb Williams before they drafted Caleb Williams. But now they want us to believe that they're trying to do right by Justin Fields. I guess better late than never. I guess better late than never with something, which is more than nothing. Seriously, they're already doing better by the next guy than they ever did by Fields. And it's not even confirmed yet who the next guy is going to be. And the next guy has not stepped in the building yet. So yes, I guess they owed it to Justin Fields to try to do right by him. Maybe they should have tried to do right by him the 3 seasons they actually had him under contract. Ultimately, Chicago did do Fields a solid by sending him to Pittsburgh. Clearly, this dude has to earn his way back to being seen around the league as a starter. Because clearly, despite what the fans think, despite even what the media thinks, nobody in the NFL sees this guy as a starter right now. And yeah, that fifth-year option has got something to do with it. But if the guy could win right now, somebody would have brought him in and let him start. Nobody in the NFL sees that guy as a starter right now. They don't. He's going to have to earn it back. But what better place to do so than a franchise that makes the playoffs even in their bad years? And who better to compete with than a so-called washed 35-year-old potato? Steeler fan, you want a change. You demanded change. There's your change. You got it. We'll see how much better and how much more productive the Steeler quarterbacks actually end up next year. But one thing is totally clear. That is the cheapest on-the-fly QB rebuild ever. And even without seeing either one of these guys step on the grass, I already know they're better off now at quarterback than they were when the season ended. Just look at Pickett. Look at the way he handled himself. Brains. Tiny brains. Brains. Bro, you think it was uncool that people glossed you tiny hands? All right, brains. Fair enough. Now you're tiny brains. Brains. They ran him off because brains. He didn't want to compete with Russet. Brains. Why, bro? Because you were that good? Brains. You're walking around with tiny hands brains. And a tiny brain, but acting brains. Like you're Patrick Mahomes. Brains. Why do I have to compete with anybody for anything? Brains. I'm Kenny freaking Pickett. Brains. Oh, you don't want to compete with a 35-year-old washed Russ. All right, brains. Go compete with Jalen Hurts. Yeah, I don't think they did right by him the way Chicago did brains. Right by Fields. And he did it to himself. Steeler fan, I mean, I burned so many brain cells giving you my thoughts on this topic. You're the ones who live it. You're the ones who care. What is your reaction to the rebuild of that quarterback room. Do you like it? Do you feel better about things? Steeler fan, where are you? Every day towards the end of the season, you are all up in my grill about how Mike Tomlin was the worst and had to go. All right, so here's your change. Now tell me how you feel. I'm not even saying I told you so or I'm right. I'm just laying it out. Here's your change. Here's how I feel about it. I think it's aight, but I think there's a value play in there for sure. What do you think? You know what they did? They ripped that iPad from his cold, dead, tiny hands. And when he asked why, they told him, because you have a cold, dead, tiny brain. How could somebody at that level have that bad of an attitude, that bad of a reaction to adversity once you get to that level? Dude, this isn't high school football. This isn't peewee ball. It wasn't even like that was they brought Kirk Cousins in. Unbelievable. We are joined right now by Brad Bronell. Brad, it's great to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. What are you doing talking about the Steelers, man? I'm a Bengals fan. We don't need to be talking about the Steelers.
My man, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. Exactly. Point very well taken. So you're all set at quarterback. I'll say that. I can't really talk about that. Yeah, how you feeling about T. Higgins, though? Do you feel like he's going to be there?
I was going to say we're upset. Our guy from Clemson, T. Higgins, who's had a great start to his career, wants to leave, so I'm not happy about it.
Does he want to leave, or are they not giving him the contract that he wants?
Well, come on, it's Cincinnati now. You know that that's going to be a little harder there than some other places.
I do know that, Brad. I do know it. I like it, man. You're locked and loaded. You have takes. I like it a lot. Hey, listen, how great did it feel to see your name flash across the screen after the heartbreak of not getting in last year at this time?
Yeah, it was great. Obviously, really happy for our players. We were one of the last couple of teams left out last year, and that's painful. That's a painful day. And so yesterday, was a much easier day. We knew we were in and probably had been a lock for a couple of weeks. And so, you're just really happy for your guys. It's hard to get into the tournament now. It's gotten extremely competitive, and there's so much parity in college basketball that, you really need to enjoy it and appreciate it. And certainly we're going to try to do that this week.
Brad Bronell joining us. I mean, Brad, I think you're right. You knew. But I would argue, and not that you're wrong about that, but I would argue there are a few other coaches who thought they were locked in too, right? Only to find out they were not. So you never really know. Like, you may have known about your situation, but overall, you never really know coming Selection Sunday, do you?
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody always asks, like, hey, do you have any idea where you're going to go, or do they give you a hint? I mean, everybody, we're all watching it for the first time on the CBS show. And so, I mean, it is, it is a cliffhanger. You are a little bit worried at all times. And obviously, we the West bracket was the last one, so we had to kind of wait. We thought we were going to be anywhere from a 6 to 7 seed, and it took a while for them to get to the West bracket where we were placed. So, yeah, my wife was getting very nervous.
No, that's gut-wrenching. That is gut-wrenching, waiting for those brackets to come up when they're the last region. So what was your immediate reaction to seeing your seed and your first-round opponent, New Mexico? What went through your mind?
Well, I was pleased with our seed. I think some of it was the reward for us scheduling, difficult non-conference schedule. We played some really good games. We played TCU and Boise and Alabama and South Carolina and UAB, so several teams that made the tournament. And so we really tried to challenge ourselves, and we had a great non-conference. We were 10-1 in the non-league. And so I think, that's kind of what we've learned here recently is non-conference strength of schedule seems to be a more important component than what some people have thought over the years. And that doesn't always, match with what all the net rankings show. And so I think that's what's really hard about all this is as a coach figuring out exactly what it is you need to do to try to put your team in the best position. Everybody knows you got to win games, but at the end of the day, it is difficult. Sometimes it feels like the goalposts move on you. And again, I think it's a really hard job because there is so much parity in college basketball.
We're talking to Brad Bronell, exactly right. And Brad, speaking of the net rankings, Rick Pitino was pretty clear about saying they're, quote, fraudulent. They're fraudulent. He didn't like that at all. What do you make of the net rankings? Do you like that as a metric?
I understand the idea. I think it's good for the sport because it gets people talking about basketball in a little more of a specific way. But, you know, I think because the NCAA came out with it, I think I think you can manipulate it a little bit with some of your non-conference scheduling, and there's too much value in how much you win by and offensive and defensive efficiency numbers that can change some things. And, you know, we were kind of on the other side of it last year. So I think it's made the public think that it's the be-all, end-all, and we kind of find out from the committee that it's really not. But they talk about it being a sorting tool, but it sure feels much more important than that when they're using it they only had this many quad one wins, quad two wins, or these are bad losses, quad three losses are bad losses. And so that's where it gets really frustrating, I think, for coaches.
I think that's fair. You mentioned last year, again, how disappointing that was. I know that one of the first texts that you received was from Hunter Tyson, who was a senior on last year's team that just missed getting in. What was his message to you, and what's it tell you about him that he reached out so quickly?
Well, he's a super young man. We're super proud of him. He's with the Denver Nuggets right now. Was a second-round pick and is stuck. And so he's just a tremendous kid, and obviously it doesn't surprise me that he would be – my first text. It just shows how much he cares about the program and his former teammates. And, you know, he was just really supportive and happy for the guys because he knows what he felt like a year ago. And so he was just happy for them and for me and the rest of the coaches.
So, Brad, what about this group overall? Like, it guarantees nothing, but could you make the argument that this might be one of, if not your most talented rosters you've had since you've been there?
Yeah, I think there's a chance of that. Our Sweet 16 team was really talented, and we actually had a starter who tore his ACL in the 19th game when we were really rolling at 16-3. But this team is close. PJ Hall, our starting center, has been with me for 4 years. He's an first-team all-league guy and a super talented guy that can shoot threes, that can score in the post, very experienced. We've got a great grad guy in Joe Girard from Syracuse who averaged 15 or 16 a game for us this year and kind of scores it all over the court, a good player. And then Chase Hunter's another guy that's been with me, who's an older guy, a fifth-year guy that's played a lot of basketball here at Clemson and scored over 1,000 points. So I like our experience. We have a couple guys that have been with us, you know, for the entirety of their careers. And then obviously Joe, who's new, and Jack Clark, a guy who's a grad transfer that starts with us. So we got a good group. They're very connected. We haven't played maybe our best basketball here recently. We played very poorly in the ACC tournament. So I'm hopeful that we got back and got to practice a couple times on Saturday and Sunday to kind of work the kinks out and get ourselves going back again.
You know, Brad, you mentioned all the guys that I was going to ask you about, literally. You mentioned them all, so I appreciate that. You're right. You're also pretty transparent in saying we weren't playing our best basketball down the stretch. So what do you do to address that? What do you tell the team? How do you get them to kind of snap out of that and remind them of who they actually are?
Yeah, you know, we've couple of our big guys have been battling some lower leg injuries, and so the last, you know, month of the season, we've had a hard time practicing. We just haven't practiced those guys very much until here about the last week. And so I do think there's some offensive rhythm and timing that you lose when you're not practicing and working together all the time. So I'm hopeful that that's going to help now that they're a little bit healthier and that we're here at the end. And so now it's kind of do or die, and guys are doing a little more. And then it's just building back their confidence and showing them some good tape of games where we won at North Carolina and we won at Alabama, and reminding them of a great win against TCU up in Toronto, and just showing them some good clips of good basketball and getting their confidence back. And the other thing is just the excitement of March Madness. These kids have dreamed of this their whole lives, and a bunch of my guys have been once. This is some of their second times since they've been with us. But you know, they know a lot of guys that aren't competing in it. And so to be able to be involved in this tournament, I think will kind of get you excited again and get you going in the right direction.
We are talking Clemson basketball for another moment or two. So, Brad, I know you're into your preparations for New Mexico. Now that you know who you're going to play, I would imagine it's pretty obvious, you know, they've got quality guard play. They've got some good veteran leadership. What else do you know about them, and what are your early thoughts on that matchup?
Well, Richard does a really good job. I coached against him when he was at Minnesota in the Big Ten Challenge, and he's really good offensive coach. They spread the floor. They run really good pick and roll stuff. Obviously, their guards, Dent, House, and Mashburn, are all elite, and they can all beat you one on one off the bounce. They can beat you in the pick and roll. They play very fast. And I think their big guys are underrated. Toppin and Nelly Joseph are both guys that finish around the basket area. They're great rebounders. They attack the basket. The dangerous thing is they're playing their best basketball right now. You know, they won four in a row there, and so they're riding a really good high. And they're just a talented older group. So Richard's been through this a lot. He knows what this is all about. His team will be ready to go. We're going to have to play really well to win.
No doubt. Great matchup. Great opportunity. You've got Clemson 21-11. They are the sixth seed. They take on the number 11 New Mexico on Friday in Memphis. Their head coach is Brad Brownell. Brad, I really appreciate it. I know it's a busy, busy week. Thanks for making time for us. Good luck in that one, and great to talk to you, Brad. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim.
Manny in L.A. What's going on, Manny? How are you?
Hey, pretty good, Romy. You know, I got to say, you beat me up pretty bad on the Trubisky thing, and you were right. And I apologize, although you wouldn't accept my apology. I thought that was not very cool. But so here's the thing about the Bears. You've been banging the Bears for years, and not without, you know, you have a right to do that. But here's the thing about Fields, and I've been listening to all the discussion since the offseason, all the people you bring onto your show, the experts about it, and everybody said the same thing. If you look at his statistics over the last 3 years, and they brought in offensive linemen, they drafted high with offensive linemen, but they whiffed on C.J. Stroud, they whiffed on Patrick Mahomes. If they didn't draft Caleb Williams and then whiffed on him too, I'd never hear the end of it from you and everybody else. So I don't understand. Pittsburgh seemed to be a very good landing spot for Fields. And you're kind of...
I want to do something, Manny. I want to do something for you. You mentioned an apology. I want them to hear the apology that you issued in 2020 after telling me how dumb I was and how little I knew and how Trubisky was the guy. This is what you sounded like in 2020, Manny.
Drafting Mitch Trubisky. And I called. I tried to get in a few times. I'm here to say that I humbly apologize and give you the props that you deserve.
You know what, Manny? I'm very reasonable. I'm not who you think I am. When you say, I did apologize, and you probably, and you didn't accept my apology, and that wasn't cool. You know what, Manny? It's now 2024. I'm reasonable. I'm not who you think I am, Manny, honestly. Even though you were coming for me all the time. Apology's still not accepted, man. Get the hell out of here with that. Come on, man. Stop it. Let's go to Denver, PJ. What's going on, PJ? How are you?
Hey, Jimmy, what's cracking?
What's up, dude?
Hey, thanks to Manny for that quick psychology lesson in making sure we don't have bitterness in our lives. I picture Mike Tomlin sitting there in a dark room with his gold and black, never a losing season crystal ball, trying to find a way for Justin Fields and Russet to be a dual quarterback system. Believe they used to do that back in the day with Cordell Stewart. From a Broncos fan perspective, he's left our quarterback room at Jared Stidham and a guy named Ben DiNucci. So Steeler fan, mop up your tears, be excited that you have a story, and hopefully Tomlin comes out of this with some sort of dual quarterback system that blows our minds. I want a war, and I think we should all war after Alvy's recent on-air appearances. War Alvy being the commencement speaker at all of his kids' continuation addresses from fifth to sixth grade for the next couple of decades. Thanks, Jim.
He's on his way. Thanks, PJ. He's on his way. I think Artie is going to have more to say about this than Mike Tomlin, how they use their quarterbacks. It's going to be interesting.